This is the Cato Daily Podcast for Wednesday, September 23rd, 2020. I'm Caleb Brown. Breonna Taylor was killed by Louisville police in the early morning hours of March 13th. Today, more than 6 months later, one of the three officers involved was charged, but not with murder, not with manslaughter, but with three counts of wanton endangerment. And none of those charges directly relate to the death of Ms. Taylor. Clark Neely, Vice President for Criminal Justice at the Cato Institute, discusses today's announcement and its implications for policing.
The killing of Breonna Taylor is a tragedy that need not have happened. There are two ways it could have been avoided. One is if we would abandon the pointless, wasteful, and immoral war on drugs. The second is if police were more careful and more thoughtful about the way they do their job and less inclined to use violent tactics like storming into somebody's residence in the middle of the night. There are plenty of other ways that this operation could have been done. They chose the most dangerous route, and that cost Breonna Taylor her life.
So the charges that were filed, this is against Brett Hankison, who's one of the three officers involved in this raid. They are charges of wanton endangerment. None of those charges relate to what occurred inside Breonna Taylor's apartment. That is, they are related to shots fired into neighboring apartments. What makes it so difficult to charge what you and I might think would be appropriate as a legal matter? What makes it difficult to charge these officers in her death?
Well, the thing that makes it most difficult is then when Kenneth Walker, who was in the apartment with Breonna Taylor, fired a shot at the door at what he believed at the time were intruders, that seems to have technically given the police the legal right to return fire in self-defense. And so to avoid that self-defense charge, it appears that what happened is that the prosecutors chose to bring charges against Hankinson for essentially blindly spraying shots, some of which appear to have entered the apartments of some of Ms. Taylor's neighbors. And none of the charges that he's facing appear to be related to any of the shots that he fired into her apartment. It's just the neighbor's apartment. But I think that's probably a tactical choice on the part of the prosecutors to avoid a potential self-defense claim on his part.
If I understand it correctly, Kentucky law and in many other states, police who are on duty, there is a presumption that they, in any interaction that they might have with people where there is some sort of scuffle or fight or shooting, that they cannot be treated as the aggressor. Is that true?
My understanding is that as long as they are engaged in the lawful performance of their duties, it is generally the case that aggression against the police can be met with force on their part, and that would include lethal force.
A lot of people don't really understand how grand juries work. And I think a lot of the, I don't know if the violence would have been any less than what it is as it's sort of unfolding in Louisville right now. I'm speaking to you from the Louisville metropolitan area right now. Grand juries have enormous power, and yet people serving on grand juries seem relatively unaware of it. Is that fair?
I think in most cases that's right. I think the grand juries have become largely captured by prosecutors, and prosecutors, in many cases, perhaps most cases, make a point to at least somewhat keep the grand jury in the dark about what their true powers are and essentially try to cultivate the grand jury as an instrument of the prosecution. And I think that prosecutors have been quite successful in transforming the institution of the grand jury from a kind of a genuinely independent fact-finding and charge evaluating body to something that's not much more than a kind of a captive instrument of the prosecution.
Police had a no-knock warrant. It was issued by a judge in Jefferson County, Kentucky, but they knocked and arguably announced themselves. It's pretty clear that they knocked. It's not clear that they announced themselves. Mr. Walker apparently asked, according to him, asked who was there and did not receive a response. And then police came and barged into the home. Radley Balco at the Washington Post has argued this warrant was issued illegally. but there's not really a mechanism to punish anybody who issues or executes these warrants.
Yeah, I mean, it depends exactly what, if anything, went wrong. So the most serious problem there may be with the warrant is that there is at least some possibility that it was obtained through misrepresentations by another officer, Joshua Janes. He represented to the judge, apparently, that he had been told by a U.S. postal inspector that the primary person of interest in this investigation, a man named Jamarcus Glover, had been picking up packages at Breonna Taylor's apartment, and that the police believe those packages may have contained drugs. It appears the postal inspector denies making that representation to Detective Janes. And so if that was a basis for the warrant being issued, and it turns out to be factually incorrect, then it's possible that the detective, if that detective knowingly put a false fact into the affidavit, then he could be facing criminal liability. If any of the detectives involved in the raid on Breonna Taylor's apartment knew that the warrant contained inaccurate information and was therefore defective, then they too could be criminally liable for that. But that's a pretty tenuous chain of events, and we just don't really know what's going on as far as the potential inaccuracies in the affidavit. But there's another issue here too, which is whether the allegations that were in the affidavit were sufficient to justify the issuance of a no-knock warrant at all. And there is a baseline requirement, and you have to articulate some case-specific reason for needing a no-knock warrant. And as Radley and others have documented, it's incredibly common for judges to issue no-knock warrants without the necessary legal showing. So that's another question in this case. And then finally, what almost certainly happened here, because it happens so often, is that it does appear that the police knocked, but the whole point of the knock and announce requirement is to knock, announce that you are the police, and then wait a period of time so that the occupants can open the door and avoid the kind of surprise, violent confrontation that occurred here. To a high degree of certainty, what happened here is that the police knocked, and then if they did announce, which is disputed, but if they did announce, they announced at the same time that they were taking down the door with a battering ram. And that's not really within the spirit of the knock and announce requirement, because it fails to avoid exactly the situation that you're trying to avoid by announcing yourself, which is to avoid a surprise confrontation with one of the occupants. I think the likelihood that Kenneth Walker, who seems to have been a solid citizen without a record, criminal record, knowingly took a shot at police officers is infinitesimally small. I think it is almost certain that he believed that he was the victim of a home invasion when he fired that shot, which strongly suggests that if the police did announce, it was ineffective because they were announcing at the same time that they were taking down the door with a battering ram. The tragedy of this case, I mean, there's a lot that's tragic about this case, but maybe the greatest tragedy of this case is that there's no need for Breonna Taylor to lose her life. There are so many things that could have been done better and in a more just way. In the first place, it's unclear why they really needed to be executing a search warrant at her apartment. There was some allegation that she was maybe involved in some way in someone else's drug dealing activity, but that's something that could have been just discussed with her. Breonna Taylor was a healthcare worker working in a hospital. She could have just been approached before or after her shift. They could have spoken with her. They also apparently had a camera surveilling her apartment. They could have picked a different time when they could have made, sort of a safer entry into the apartment. But it's common, unfortunately, it's become quite common for police to choose what is tactically the most hazardous option available to them, which is what they call a dynamic entry in the middle of the night. That's one of the most dangerous things that you can do, is surprise somebody like they did here. It was an extraordinarily poor choice or exercise of judgment. And of course, again, the maybe the most profound issue here is that this is going to happen when you have drug prohibition. When you have a war on drugs, there will be victims. And the idea that it was worth the life of this young woman to enforce morally indefensible and utterly pointless and unhelpful drug laws is perhaps the central tragedy here. This case, more than anything to me, underscores that the time has long since come to end the drug war so that we don't continue to produce needless victims like Breonna Taylor.
The city of Louisville recently settled some civil claims with the Taylor family for something like $12 million. That will be paid largely by taxpayers, Kentucky taxpayers in particular. And once again, that's a relatively small matter, but there's no reason for that either.
No. Kentucky taxpayers will be on the hook for $12 million because they ultimately are left holding the bag for the stupid execution of a stupid policy that shouldn't be on the books in the first place. And there was, an operation that was undertaken by people who placed very little emphasis or concern on the safety of Breonna Taylor and the other occupant of her apartment. In the service of a morally indefensible and pointless drug war. And until we get to the root of the problem, which is the criminalization of non-wrongful conduct that doesn't harm anybody and doesn't represent a threat to the fabric of civil society, there will continue to be victims, unnecessary victims of that utterly indefensible policy. And Breonna Taylor, unfortunately, is just simply the latest one, but there will be more.
Clark Neely is Vice President for Criminal Justice at the Cato Institute. Subscribe to the Cato Daily Podcast anywhere you please and follow us on Twitter @CatoPodcast.